Should try to liquidate this. Okay.
Alana, you ready to go?
Yes.
Esther, Julie?
Yeah.
Okay, ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. All right, good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting on the 12th floor of the Capitol today for a regularly scheduled commission meeting. It's approximately 10 a.m. on Wednesday, June 25th. I have a few opening comments, but I see if my colleagues have any first, because mine might take a while. So, Commissioner Crispin, any opening comments?
No, not at this time, I don't.
Okay, Commissioner Fedorchak?
I'll just make a couple comments. I was at the Pipeline Summit yesterday, the Governor's Pipeline Summit, and it was a pretty action-packed morning. And we were represented on a panel by myself. Randy was there keeping tabs on me, making sure I didn't say anything inaccurate. Did I succeed, Randy?
You were probably the star of the show.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Anyway, it was just, again, an emphasis on the importance of all the pipeline projects that we review, and all the pipeline development in the state is the safest, cleanest transportation method for crude oil and gas. And we want to do, I on the commission want to do my part in promoting this industry and doing everything we can to support the safe and environmentally sound and efficient construction of pipeline projects throughout our state. I think there were some challenges identified yesterday, some advances identified, a lot of high-tech solutions identified. It was a really good discussion, and I left thinking North Dakota not only can but will be a leader in how we develop the shale resources in our country. And we're on the way to doing that right now. And with the work underway in our agency and many others, I think we're going to be showing a lot of the rest of the country how to do this. And it's going to make a huge difference for our country in the next 50 to 100 years. So really exciting time to be part of this work.
All right. Anything else?
Nope.
I just maybe echo on a little bit of that. I look forward to the discussion this next legislative session about the whole pipeline matrix, I'll call it, where the commission will further investigate the additional jurisdiction on interstate liquids. With the now we get a better picture of the pipeline growth in the state. Does that mean more pipeline inspectors? So it's going to be you don't just double your pipeline capacity without doubling some of the regulatory oversight on it. So we'll try to find, I think, that right balance. So I look forward to that discussion. The one part that I did want to spend a little bit of time today and talk about is with my colleagues, I didn't have a chance to with the hearing and everything else going on, is I'm sure you're both aware of, over the weekend, Xcel Energy had some, I would say, critical power outages in the Fargo area. And so I was in contact with Xcel on Saturday and Sunday and Monday. And basically, they had up to 6,000 customers out of power. And it was, I would say, a protracted outage. And so we've spent a lot of time in this commission over the last 5 years making sure they made the right investment in the IntelliTeam switches, the hiring a dedicated electrical engineer in the Fargo-Grand Forks system, making sure that if they have outages, there's a bill credit that can go back to the customers. I mean, identifying that they have enough crews in the area. And so I was in contact with Xcel and asked them, or told them, that I was going to open up an official inquiry. And so what I'd like to do is add to our schedule and get to discussions. We can talk about it more if you want to talk about it now, I guess, and then schedule within the next 4 to 6 weeks to have Xcel come back here and really just walk through the sequence of events that happened, because, there was not only individual homeowners that were affected, but this took place on a Sunday morning. I cite the example of, Susie's Shack up there in North Fargo lost, 4 to 6 hours of business on a Sunday, and so it impacts businesses, it impacts homes. And I guess what I'm trying to really get to is we've spent a lot of time making sure they make the investment in their infrastructure, so when have them come back to us and really give us the details of how these outages took place and see if it's tied back to any of the things that should have been fixed with what was laid out in the previous rate cases. And so I do know that on Monday it was a third-party damage that caused the outage. So it looks like Saturday and Sunday was operational challenges, but Sunday was a third-party hit into the infrastructure. So I've already talked to Julie Prescott a little bit about it, but I can kind of see this is in two areas. One is we'll have them come tell us exactly what the sequence of events for the outages on Saturday, Sunday, but then we'll probably have a separate, maybe even investigation, into the call before you dig, if you will, if they had a locate ticket, if it wasn't done properly, because it does appear that from what I've seen, that Monday one is somebody struck their line, so not, kind of out of their control. And if you've been in North Fargo lately, it's construction mess up there, so there may be a lot of other things at play here. But the big thing for me was we can't have customers losing this much service for this long a time. And that's where I right away talked about, or I thought of, the crews. And two rate cases ago, we really had a lot of questions about them having the right amount of dedicated crews in North Dakota. And it does appear there was, in my opinion, there was some delay in the crew response time getting out there to fix the outages. So I guess that's kind of the backdrop. I wanted to, we'll talk about it more, unless if you want to, any comments now, we could sure walk through it a little bit. Okay.
I think it's great. I appreciate you initiating that, because I think it's the right thing to do.
Okay, we can talk about anything, and we can talk about it later. Or?
Yeah, okay. I think we just do that on scheduling.
All right. I did want to throw one thing out there on the flip side of it. One thing that we've learned is that no matter how reliable the power is, it's never going to be 100%. And so you always want to have customers have surge suppressors. Businesses should have their backup generation. So you try to find that balance in there. And that's one thing, that the power has become so reliable that nobody has surge suppressors and backup generation. So you know, no matter how perfect it is, it's still going to have those kind of things. So, but I do think it's important for us to go through it. So we'll have any, if there's any questions, we can cover that at the end.
It seems to me we are also due a report on their plan, that they performance plan that they were under.
The annual update the number of outages that took place.
Because we haven't received that for 2013. It seems like we should be receiving that or hearing about what they have experienced, what their averages were, and how much, if any, customers are going to be receiving money back, that type of thing, or credits on their bill.
We can certainly follow through with that, because it probably was around the summer time frame, so that'd be now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, any other comments before?
One more?
Sure.
for Dave and for anybody else who's watching or listening, the newest member of our PSC team is here, Victor Shook, our new analyst. And so we certainly want to welcome him aboard. It makes the team a lot stronger having him with us.
Perfect. All right. Anything else? Okay, we have several items on consent. I would move passage of the items on consent.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
Okay, item BK1. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Northern State Power Company for a certificate of public convenience and necessity for Red River Valley Units 1 and 2 near Hankinson, North Dakota, case number PU13-195.
Second.
In April of 2013, NSP filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity for the constructions of Red River Valley Units 1 and 2. In October and November of last year, we consolidated these hearings. And basically, I'm not going to go through the whole story here, but to generally summarize, the company asked for PCN to build these plants down in the Hankinson area. During the process of the rate case, there was a settlement agreement that was agreed to between the North Dakota PSC advocacy staff and the company. And during that, the company agreed that they would build 400 megawatts of thermal generation resources in North Dakota no later than 2036. So the company has asked for basically that they no longer need this CPCNN. And so what today sets the dates that anyone requesting a hearing to talk about this needs to do so by July 31st of 2014. So the way I see this, this is one of those things that's kind of left out there that was not completely solved by the rate case settlement, because the PCNN is still in front of us to make a decision on. And so the best way to do this is to offer up, if anybody wants to have a formal hearing, they can do so. If not, the commission can ask for one ourselves, but more than likely we'd probably have an informal on it. For me personally, that the commitment that the company gave during the rate case to build the generation may offset this CPCNN, because this is very specific to the Hankinson area. And so certainly not judging this right now, but I do think it's appropriate that we tie this up, because I don't like having loose things hanging out there after the rate case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Lana. Item BK2. I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Northern State Power Company for a certificate of public convenience and necessity for the Border Winds Project in Rolla County, case number PU13-743.
Second.
In this case, it's very similar to the previous one, but however, this is for the Border Winds Project, which is also part of the rate case and the settlement. But what's interesting about this one is the previous case, the company does not want the PCNN. In this one, I absolutely believe the company does want the PCNN. And so the same type of setup here where comments and requests for hearing must be received by July 31st, 2014. If no one requests a hearing, we're more than likely schedule this for an informal. But I do see this as also a critical step in tying up the previous rate case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Can I just ask a procedural question here? We had a hearing on this back last fall. There was a whole series of them, and we also had one, I believe, on the Hankinson. So from a procedural standpoint, why do we need to submit another opportunity for hearing and hold another informal hearing?
We just thought it was best that we give one more chance to the public after the rate case had been solved and the settlement agreement in to do it. Really tightened up the record, and that's why if there's official hearing, we would do it, but if not, we certainly have a record that we could make a decision.
So in case something has changed since then, or
someone's viewpoint may have changed, that they had the hearing,
move the settlement.
The settlement has been taken care of, just one more way. And our general counsel happens to be sitting right here.
Yes, Jerry and I have had this discussion pretty seriously. But with the filing of the settlement and the fact that the settlement kind of overlooked dealing with this, even though it said it had resolved all issues, then it left these issues hanging out there unresolved. There, things happened after the hearing that confused the record, so to speak. And so the notice will make the final resolution clearer. It'll make the ability to come to a final resolution clearer. There's questions after the hearing with the settlement about this issue.
Mm.
So it covers fleshing any of those out if anyone has any concerns.
Okay.
So that was my recommendation, and the company understood why we were doing it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Lana. Item BK3. I move the Commission adopt the finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order issuing site certificate number 39 to Sunflower Wind Project, LLC, authorizing construction of its proposed 110-megawatt Sunflower Wind Energy Project in Stark and Morton Counties of North Dakota, case number PU14-105.
Second.
In March of this year, Sunflower Wind Project, we'll refer to as just Sunflower, filed an application for certificate of site compatibility for a wind energy project in Morton and Stark counties. In April, the commission deemed the application incomplete, set up the notice of filing and notice of hearing, and we scheduled and held the hearing May 12th, 10 a.m. at the Hebron Community Center in Hebron at 10 a.m. Central Daylight Time. During the hearing, we learned a little bit more about the project. The project will consist of up to 59 wind turbine generators, which will be placed throughout the project area. At this point in time, they have not selected a final turbine, but it comes out it'll either be 55 of the Vestas turbines or 59 of the GE 1.85 turbines. And we've seen this in previous hearings where they don't quite have the turbine selected, but they go through the hearing and they give us the worst-case scenario, if you will, for shadow flicker and setbacks. So I certainly think it's appropriate. The project is expected to take 6 to 9 months for completion, total estimated cost of $180 million. All easements for the project have been obtained. And I do have a map. Pick on Austin here. Can you double-check with John? John printed off some maps and set them on the table for us of the exact project area, but basically south of Hettinger, or Hebron, I'm sorry, south of Hebron. And it's going to, not parallel, but it's kind of parallel straddle the interstate, so we'll have the maps available. The turbines will use the supervisory control and data acquisition, the SCADA system, to monitor the turbine movement. Getting into some of the environmental siting criteria, if you will, approximately 55 acres of ag production land will be impacted due to the turbines and associated roads. There are no economically recoverable coal reserves identified in this project area. During the studies, that no sites eligible for the National Register of Historic Places were found. However, Sunflower will complete its final studies and hopefully obtain SHPO concurrence before they can start construction. And one of the criteria here is they have to file with us their final letter from the SHPO approving this project before they can certainly start construction. They consulted with the appropriate wetlands and wildlife agencies and received no comments back, nor no objections. They also completed a fixed avian study, raptor nest survey. No eagles were recorded in the study area. Let's see here. There are some additional setback requirements of the different counties. Stark County actually has a setback of 2,000 feet from occupied dwellings, so that's a little more restricted than the commission has used, but that's fine. The county is always, I always defer to the county, so the company will comply with the Stark County setbacks as well as the Morton County setbacks, which are a little bit different, but they're also, the Morton County setbacks are more traditional to what the commission would use. But like I said, either way, I always defer to the counties, and if and then the company agrees to all the county requirements because, of course, they'll need county approval as well. The Sunflower will participate in the North Dakota One Call system. And finally, the order sets up to 110 megawatts of wind power. They'll need final SHPO concurrence. And since there's an interconnection with the Western Area Power Administration, they do have to go through the NEPA process. And so before they can start construction, the two big things are they'll have to have the final NEPA concurrence, if you will, the finding of no significant impact, and they'll also need the SHPO concurrence. But quite honestly, we had this hearing. I don't recall that there was really any negative, if you will, testimony during the hearing. Basically, I think the company set it up very well, and I look forward to voting in support of this project.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I noted at the hearing there was a lot of members from the public there and from other regions, some on a research project trying to figure out how this works because they're looking at a wind farm in their area as well. And so there's really pretty good public attendance. But according to my notes, only one member of the public got up and spoke. And the company testified that at all of their open meetings, their open houses, they didn't have any landowners objecting to the project. So I think that this appears to be a project that the folks in that area want. And again, it'll help to generate more power that's available in all of North Dakota to support our growing economy. So,
any further discussion?
I agree with the chairman on that it's my intention to vote for this project. However, I differ in that I don't look forward to it for two reasons. And one of them is the fact that in response to a question, the company testified that these are exclusive easements that they have with the landowners. And I think that sadly, the meaning of an exclusive easement is not very well known publicly. And in the case of something like this that covers thousands of acres, the owners of this project who now hold these easements, it's conceivable that they maybe don't even need the one-call system. They can pretty much just say no to everything. And it could ultimately deny those landowners opportunity for telecommunications upgrades and things like that. And it's not necessary that the company would just say no to things, but if they have financial minimums in mind before they would allow someone to cross it, you know, to companies like, and I'm thinking specifically of rural telephone companies, oftentimes the payment for easements is very little because they're a cooperative and everybody's working together to lay it out. And if one property owner is going to demand more of the kinds of dollar amounts that we relate to energy companies, they might just choose not to go there. And so I think these exclusive easements are really a negative for the landowners and ultimately for other industry in North Dakota to lay out huge blocks like this. But I also don't find that to be within my realm here as a commissioner to unravel it either. But I do want to make the point that I think as a state we need to be awful cautious and hope that industry is listening and that we will avoid these exclusive easements in the future. Secondly, and more apropos, I guess, to our positions on the Public Service Commission is the strength of our electric grid in general. And my own opinion is that we are becoming too reliant on wind energy and natural gas peaking plants to back it up for our grid. The North Dakota legislature objective of 10% has long since been surpassed, and it really disturbs me that we are becoming this reliant on wind. However, in recent months, thanks to the administration and specifically the EPA, we're down to almost zero alternatives. And so do we want what is going to be, in my opinion, a less reliable energy grid because we're becoming too reliant on wind, or do we want one that is short all the time, even when the wind is blowing? And so in this case, we know that Basin Electric Service Area has enormous needs in the coming years, and we know that there is not a reasonable chance of siting coal or something like that in the very near future to provide that need. And so I guess this is the next best alternative. And as poor of an alternative as I think it is the best one that we have in front of us. So I'm going to vote for this project.
Is there any further discussion?
Judy, no. All right. I would like to visit with my colleague, Commissioner Crispin, on this issue. The our role here is siting of a wind farm. Our role is not rate determination or those kind of things, and so that's why it's, to me, the siting criteria says we site according to a set of rules, and that's where if a company chooses to build something, we follow through the rules. And the part about the need and who's going to pay for it, I think that's where, in this particular case, you brought it up, this is a Basin Electric is looking at to buying the power from this. And that's one thing that I've long since said is where we have a case where, let's say, an Otter Tail or an Xcel or an MDU goes through and does the siting on it, just because we approve the siting of it doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be approved in rate base. And so I think there's a big distinction in the siting process vice what we may or may not approve in rates. And the part about the easements, I agree with you wholeheartedly, but the big what was the word you used here, restrictive easements?
Exclusive.
Exclusive easements. But I will go back to the way the law has been set out, that this is not a power line where that you can set it up where there can be a way to go back and do eminent domain on something. In the cases of a wind farm, you absolutely have to have landowners approve it. You cannot put a wind turbine on somebody's property. So the individual landowners have agreed to the easements by their own doing. So it's a good campaign, I think, to understand the importance of what easements may or may not do for the landowners, but this is somebody's property rights that wants to use the property in the way that they've signed the easements. So I don't ever like getting in the middle of the property rights discussion because it's their property. But I think the whole piece of easements in North Dakota, it's outside what the PSC does in our criteria, but we always ask the question. But I do think a larger discussion with industry and others on just what these easements will mean in different areas is very appropriate, because as we learned yesterday in some of the pipeline discussion and we've seen in telephone discussion, the customer, the citizens out there, they're starting to look at the fees that a telephone company might be able to pay for a fiber optic line and trying to equate it to what they may get for a pipeline through their project, and there's just no way it works that way. So, and the backdrop, I guess, of the whole wind mix, I do believe that we need to continue to keep the wind growth in the state, but we have to do the same thing with combined cycle natural gas, and I do believe we can build another coal plant in North Dakota. I think that we're going to have to leverage these companies that are out there that have the resources to build a coal plant and get together, because if we're, as a state, we're 3,000 megawatts short of power right now, I think we'll need 1,000 megawatts of combined cycle gas, 1,000 megawatts of coal, whether we capture the CO2 or not, and 1,000 megawatts of wind and other type of things, because it's a huge number. So I think we absolutely have got to keep coal in the mix, and we have to figure out how to do it. I think that's our job, is to make sure we leverage these companies, that they build the generation that they need as appropriate. And maybe when companies come in here and they ask for ADPs for simple cycle gas, you'll see a shift in this commission to where we'll say we want combined cycle gas instead of these peaking plants. So I would agree with that.
Yeah, and I sure don't want to imply that I've given up on coal. You know, I think in the long term, just like Germany and some other European countries have done, they've realized that it is needed and it is the best alternative for baseload power. But, you know, NERC has expressed concerns about the whole MISO area and having enough generation capacity just in the next, in like, I can't remember, 2016 or 2017 time frame. And clearly, other than wind, baseload capacity is not going to be sited that quickly. And so that's why I think that the need for this facility is there.
Go ahead.
I think, Randy, you bring up an interesting point, and when you look at our what we're supposed to be considering in these orders, ensuring continuing system reliability is one of the criteria. And I appreciate that that's how you're coming at this on the aspect of wind. How I rectify this is that this project is being constructed by a third-party developer, or, you know, it's an independent developer. They're building it, and it's on their backs to find a buyer for it. The buyer is Basin Electric Power Company, who has to look at how they can use this power. How does it fill their needs? Do they need intermittent resources? Can they use the renewable? Do they have enough base load to cover their needs ultimately? And that's their decision. I'm comfortable that they're working on that. They need to get busy working on additional baseload generation in the very near future, and in my conversations with them, that's at the forefront of their priorities. But I'm comfortable that Basin has looked at this and believes that they can use this power in a way that allows them to provide affordable, reliable electricity to their customers.
It's interesting, too, this whole discussion. We got the 111D rules in the backdrop. I see where the governor of Indiana now has suspended the renewable mandate. And so we're in the middle of all this, and I think it's good we're talking about this because it's going to be exciting times.
And I would just caveat my comments that is really outside of the siting process, too, that those conversations took place with Basin. But in terms of supporting system reliability, that is part of the mix on this issue, I think, on this project.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Crispin, to you.
RC1, I move the commission execute contract number AM-699-14 with Antler Enterprises Incorporated in the amount of $186,500 for rotary drilling and other work associated with the 2014 exploratory drilling project at abandoned underground coal mines.
Second.
In early March, the AML division issued an invitation for bids for rotary drilling and drill hole casing for the 2014 exploratory drilling project at abandoned underground mines. This project involves drilling to locate abandoned underground mine workings, primarily along public highways in the Wilton area. Competitive sealed bidding procedures were used. The public bid opening occurred on April 22nd, and four responsive bids were received for this project. The low bid came from Antler Enterprises Incorporated of Blackhawk, South Dakota, in the amount of $186,500. The other bids ranged from just over $198,000 to $996,000. The staff estimate for the project was $232,000. A notice of intent to award a contract to Antler Enterprises was sent to them for signing on May 6th. The signed contract has been returned and properly executed performance and payment bonds, liability insurance documents, and other requested materials have been received. The contract is now ready for execution by the Commission. The AML division has sufficient funds and current OSM grants for this and the other projects planned for 2014.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Maybe just add a little thought on this. The The staff estimate was at $232,000, so I'm comfortable with the bid from Antler at $186,000. But the range of bids up to almost $1 million in this project, I think, was stunning, quite honestly. So I do get concerned. On the flip side, though, we've had cases where we have the staff estimate and the bid comes in way well below the staff estimate, and it turns out they're not able to do the work. And we've had that happen in the recent past. So I'm comfortable with this, but there is something that maybe we should talk about down the road, where if we get a bid that's so low outside of the staff estimate that we maybe do some extra screening on it. And we've done that in the past, but trying to find to make sure we get the staff estimate, but we don't get a bid so low where we've got a company that can't do the work. They don't understand the project.
And I think the ML department recognized that after the episode last year that we got resolved. I can't remember exactly when it happened, but we got it resolved last year. But I think there's a pretty good second look to these companies if they would come in too low now.
No, absolutely. I'd never seen a bid that much over the staff estimate.
It's an important point, though.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
RC2, now we're moving on to active coal mines. Active coal mines are always a hoot.
Oh, that's why I'm laughing so hard, because a lot of thought I was laughing at this.
Okay, I move the commission approve revision number 35 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK-8705 held by the Falkirk Mining Company to update legal and ownership information and operations, reclamation, and monitoring plans for the next five-year term.
Second.
On March 5th of this year, the Falkirk Mining Company submitted the application for revision number 35 to surface mining permit number NAFK-8705 for its mine near Underwood, North Dakota. And now we got to really pay attention here, so I save time on the next motion, because these two kind of match up. And so I'm going to go over some things in this case and then just skip over them in the next case. This revision updates the legal and ownership information, surface water management plans, revegetation sampling methods and standards, wildlife monitoring, and other mining operations and reclamation plans and schedules for the next five-year term. And so in the rest of my explanation here, we're going to have filing dates and mine plans and information about bonds and official notice filings that are all exactly the same. So I'm just going to go through them on this one. Revision number 35 here has no plans for coal removal in the permit during the next five-year permit term. However, reclamations of areas that were mined through 2010 is ongoing and will continue for many years, and it is expected the coal removal activities will resume within this permit area by 2037. Falkirk's shop and office complex, their coal handling facilities, the portions of the main haul roads are all located within the permit area, and these facilities are used to support mining operations in other permit areas at the Falkirk mine. So the next permit term will expire on June 6th of 2019, 5 years from now. Revision number 35 was deemed a significant revision. And this is a distinction between this and my item number 4 with BNI Coal. So I just point that out. This is a significant revision, and so it was subject to public notice requirements. Falkirk has submitted the affidavits of publication of the newspaper notice from the McLean County Independent and the Bismarck Tribune. We also notified appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and advisory committee members, and we received no objections to this revision application. The current bond amount, which is $76.5 million, is sufficient to cover the current estimated worst-case reclamation costs in the consolidated bond area that covers this permit and other permits at the Falkirk Mine at this time. However, a new worst-case cost estimate for the consolidated bond area is currently under review by the Reclamation Division as part of revision number 24 to a different permit area, and that bond will likely be increased prior to the approval of that revision. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this revision and respectfully recommends that it be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
RC3, I move the commission approve renewal number 5 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK-8705 held by the Falkirk Mining Company to extend the permit term for another 5 years until July 6, 2019.
Second.
So again, that was the revision of kind of the technicalities. Now this would be the renewal for the next 5 years on basically the same area. So all those details are the same. Falkirk needs the renewal to continue to conduct mining-related operations within the existing permit area that covers 10,485.6 acres. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of the renewal application and respectfully recommends that it be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Passes.
Okay, and RC4, I move the commission approve renewal number 6 to surface coal mining permit number BNCR-8202 held by BNI Coal Limited for the Center Mine to extend the permit term on the existing permit area for another 5 years until July 31st of 2019.
Second.
So this is an extension, a renewal of the permit, similar to the last motion. And I'll get into why we didn't do that revision in a moment. But on March 6th of this year, BNI Coal Limited filed the application for renewal number 6 to their surface coal mining permit number 8202 to continue mining and reclamation operations within this existing permit area through July 31st of 2019. This permit covers portions of Oliver County totaling 727.71 acres. BNI Coal applied for this permit renewal because soil stockpiles, sedimentation ponds, and an equipment supply staging area in the permit area are used to support mining operations and other center mine permits. Coal removal was completed in this permit area many years ago. At the time BNI Coal filed this permit renewal application, they also filed the application for revision number 35 to update the legal and financial section, the groundwater monitoring plans, etc. However, this was deemed an insignificant revision application and has been approved by staff. BNI Coal submitted the affidavits of publication for the newspaper notices for the renewal. We notified the appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. We received no objections to this renewal application. Evidence of adequate performance bond and liability insurance are on file. This permit and three other permits at the center mine are part of a consolidated bond area, which is covered by surety and collateral bonds that total over $34 million. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this five-year permit renewal application and respectfully recommends its approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just like to applaud the work of our folks upstairs. I know they've been really busy this spring with permit reviews and renewals. You guys do a really thorough job. You lay it out for us in a really clear manner and have a lot of confidence in your work. It's great to have the expertise and thoroughness that exists in our mining program, and it's a real service to our state, so thank you.
Well said.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. Motion passes.
Okay, and then moving on out of those wacky mining issues.
Yeah,
and,
really funny.
on to a grain licensing issue, a case. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-14-248, granting the request of Prairie Premium Oil, LLC, to operate a 50,000-bushel grain warehouse at Northwood, North Dakota, effective immediately.
Second.
This is a rather interesting license application. That doesn't really just seem to fall into a nice category like maybe most of our other licensees. Prairie Premium Oil filed this application to operate a 50,000-bushel grain warehouse at Northwood. As provided in our administrative code, Prairie Premium filed a $50,000 surety bond. That's what that capacity of a storage facility should require. Prairie Premium informed the commission that they have not purchased any grain and will not receive any grain until the license is approved, so we've covered that base. It's in their intention that they'll purchase canola seed for processing into oil. Prairie Premium informed the commission that during the first 2 to 3 months of business, the plant will operate at 50% capacity, and when fully operational, they estimate purchases of 1,750 ton of canola per week with a value of nearly $900,000. And that's where this is so much different than most of our licensees, in that I don't know what their hours of operation are going to be, but I figured a 50-hour work week, in a half a day, they will take in more canola value-wise than what the $50,000 bond would cover in a half a day. So it's just kind of different. And Prairie Premium has been working with staff and recognizes the commission's concern about whether the bond amount under our administrative code is appropriate given the expected volume of weekly grain purchases. They notified staff that they would be willing to increase their bond to $250,000 and commit to payment for grain purchases within 30 days of delivery. Our normal standard would be 45 days of delivery. So that cuts the potential, you know, outstanding tickets by a third, and as well as five times the bonding amount that our code would call for. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends a grain warehouse license be issued to Prairie Premium Oil, LLC, and I recommend it as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
This is a really good case to have come up so soon after we talked about this the last time about some of the work that we need to do in this area on the processors. I think it's interesting to note that it feels like you're licensing a processor, but we're not licensing a processor. We're licensing the facility, the storage facility for the processor. So the storage facility is relatively small, but which calls for this small bond. But their volumes are large, so that's where I think we need to do our work in figuring out what kind of a formula we develop to accommodate that. If I crunch the numbers on this one, if they have 30 days of purchases that could be outstanding at any one time, so that's 4 weeks, it's about $3.6 million in value of product based on the canola value for the week. So obviously, when you crunch numbers, it doesn't look very good even with the higher bond, but that's where we need, you know, you put a lot at stake in the investors and their plan and their business model and all of this. So I'm comfortable with this. I give the company credit for stepping forward and volunteering to provide that higher bond, and I really look forward to the work we're going to do to try to better shape this area of regulation and work with the industry to figure out what's the balance here. So to that extent, we talked about that a little bit ago, Randy, but have you followed up with any plans or have you had time to kind of come up with a game plan for how you want to pursue that.
Well, one of the first steps is going to be that I'll be attending the grain dealers convention here in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And so continue to move forward with it and work with them. And, you know, it's a system with a lot of moving parts. Mm-hmm. And as industry has evolved, our code, you know, clearly a case like this shows that our code needs to be adjusted. And I think that the best way to make those adjustments is to communicate with the people involved, both the producers as well as the dealers, to make sure that we come up with a good system, not just come up with a different system fast.
Yep.
And so that'll be, I think, the next step. And that's in, I don't remember the date, but it's in early July. And I'm on their agenda, and we'll be meeting with them and hopefully just spending quite a bit of time there so we can have all the visits that all the input that I can get from them mm-hmm. will be useful, and I think we'll be moving forward relatively soon. I think in this case, before we vote and move on, though, it's important to commend Sue Richter and our licensing team for not just looking at this as another application and here's the slot that it fits in, but recognizing that this is different than the way that the rules would suggest that should be handled, and working with the company and coming up with a better solution for the producers that the company is able to work with too.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
All right. Anything else, Commissioner?
I'm done.
I thought of two things that I wanted to bring out before Commissioner Fedorchuk motion. Steve Strege's retirement is tomorrow. He's a grain man. He's been head of the grain dealers for 39 years. So I don't know if I know I'll be over there. I don't know if my colleagues will be over there, but it's tomorrow night, 6 p.m., where's it at, the Holiday Inn?
In Fargo, yeah.
In Fargo. So Steve's retiring after 39 years, and his replacement, Stu, is on board. So just a shout-out to Steve. And Commissioner Crispin's comment about the 50-hour work week, I have to share a story about Commissioner Crispin. When I first met him, he talked about he only worked half days ranching. I thought that was pretty good, and he told me, yeah, it doesn't matter which half. You just pick 12 hours a day, and you work it. So anyway, with that, Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Sounds great.
Okay, I have just one motion, but it's a big one, and it's going to take a little while. So I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order issuing certificate of corridor compatibility number 153 and route permit number 165 to North Dakota Pipeline Company for the construction of a crude oil pipeline and associated facilities located in Williams, Montreal, Ward, McHenry, Pierce, Towner, Ramsey, Nelson, and Grand Forks Counties, North Dakota, case number PU-13-848.
Second.
Whenever I read a series of counties like that, I feel like I'm giving a tornado warning or something. Okay, now down to business. All right, on October 30th, Enbridge Pipelines, LLC, filed with the Public Service Commission applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit to construct a crude oil pipeline and associated facilities from Beaver Lodge Station near Tioga, North Dakota, to the North Dakota-Minnesota border south of Grand Forks. I'm going to go through this application in some detail. It's a lengthy project and required a number of hearings throughout the state, so I want to cover all the relevant aspects of it. The project consists of approximately 616 miles of new pipeline to be located in North Dakota, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. The total approximate cost of the project is $2.6 billion, of which $1.3 billion is attributed to North Dakota, the North Dakota portion. The project begins at North Dakota Pipeline's existing Beaver Lodge station near Tioga and extends easterly across North Dakota, exiting the state just south of the city of Grand Forks. Approximately 300 miles of the project will be located in North Dakota. 152 miles of the 300 miles will parallel existing pipelines or utility corridors, with the remaining 148 miles located in greenfield areas. The project also includes construction of new pump station in Nelson County near Lakota, and upgrades to the existing Beaver Lodge and Stanley and Berthold pump stations. Let's see here. In their application, the company applied to waive and reduce certain procedures and time schedules required under North Dakota Century Code Chapter 49-22, which requires separate filings and applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit. We had three hearings on this matter, February 19th in Grand Forks, February 20th in Devil's Lake, and February 27th in Minot, where we heard testimony from the company and any member of the public who wished to offer comments or concerns or support. The issues that we considered, there was really four main issues. First of all, does the project provide minimal adverse effects on the environment and the welfare of citizens of North Dakota? Is it compatible with environmental preservation and efficient use of resources? Will the project ensure continued system reliability and integrity and ensure that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly, timely fashion? And is it appropriate for the commission to waive the procedures and time schedules as requested? I provide kind of the overview of the route. I want to get a little bit more detail into some of the additions being made at the above ground structures. There will be a new pump station in Lakota, consuming about 46 acres just outside of that town. At the Beaver Lodge station, two new 150,000 barrel storage tanks will be constructed. At the Stanley station, one new 80,000-barrel storage tank will be constructed. And at the Berthold station, one new 300,000-barrel storage tank will be constructed, along with some other related services. So a significant amount of storage added to this system as well. The pipe will be a 24-inch outside diameter with a 0.375-inch wall thickness through Eggland and 0.438 to half-inch wall thickness at various crossings through under roads and waterways. The need for this facility, the current pipeline export capacity for North Dakota Pipeline Company in North Dakota is 355,000 barrels per day. This project will add a capacity of 250,000 barrels per day to the Beaver Lodge and Berthold stations and 225,000 barrels per day to the Berthold station in Clearbrook, Minnesota. Production in the Bakken, the company testified production in the Bakken has grown from 138,000 barrels per day in January 2008 to over 910,000 barrels per day last August. And I note that today in Tioga, there's a celebration commemorating the official 1 million barrel per day mile marker for the Bakken production level. So already exceeding that, and the company projects that by 2026 we'll be at 1.35 million barrels per day. So there's a lot of need for this project. And let's see, the company studied a variety of preferred locations, and they did a approximate 250 to 450 foot wide environmental survey corridor, conducting cultural resource field surveys, biological and wetland water body field surveys, and other environmental assessments. They went beyond the 450 feet in certain locations to address known environmental and encroachment issues. NDPL also identified a route that utilizes existing right-of-way corridors to the extent practicable, and currently approximately half the project route follows those corridors. The reason why they deviated from that route is because population centers had grown around those routes. So in an attempt to avoid population centers, certain water bodies, and other constructability issues, the NDPL routed the pipeline around the city of Minot, around the city of Devil's Lake, and surrounding area, which necessitated a majority of the greenfield construction. There were alternatives considered, transporting crude by oil, crude by truck, crude by other potential pipeline projects, and crude by rail. The company estimated that a fleet of 4,354 trucks per day would be required to transport the volumes projected to be carried by this project. They conducted a Class 1 literature search on the 2-mile-wide study area and a Class 2 and 3 cultural resource inventory on the environmental survey corridor, and NDPL analyze environmental data on soils, land use, wetlands, water body crossings, and protected plant and animal species. They consulted with a wide variety of government agencies and entities, all of whom are listed in our order. So the commission has established criteria to guide us in the corridor and route suitability evaluation and designation process. These are classified as exclusion areas, avoidance areas, selection criteria, and policy criteria. A transmission facility route must not be sited within an exclusion area, and there are no exclusion areas crossed by this project. They identified two municipal water supplies within the environmental survey corridor, one located near the city of Deering, which they will avoid, and one located near the city of Grand Forks. They've worked closely with the city of Grand Forks. There is the city representatives have not expressed any oppositions to the proposed route, and alternatives to the proposed route would have impacted more ag land, which is designated as an avoidance area, and more roadways requiring more construction within greenfield areas. That's why the current route is the preferred route. NDPL identified cultural resource sites within the environmental survey area. Two sites were recommended for inclusion in the National Register of Historic Places, and they will avoid these sites. They will do continued work on additional sites and avoid them as appropriate and possible. NDPL will complete the remaining field surveys in this spring and will submit the results to the State Historical Preservation Officer. They have identified 38 rural residences and businesses located within 500 feet of the proposed project route. All of the owners of these facilities have granted waivers to allow construction within 500 feet. All the biological and wetland surveys are complete or will be completed. The project is not anticipated to have significant impacts on fish and wildlife resources, nor are significant impacts anticipated to endangered, threatened, or sensitive plant or animal species. The corridor will be selected as the environmental survey area and facilities in Exhibit D of the application as amended. The pipeline company has agreed to a number of steps to mitigate the impact of the project, as indicated by our certificate relating to order provisions and the tree and shrub mitigation plan. They've identified 17 valve site locations for the project located in North Dakota. The exact site will be determined when the sites are finalized, and it's based on computerized model to account for high consequence areas on or near the center line of the project. Such high consequence areas are high population areas, wellhead and drinking water areas, commercially navigable waterways, as well as ecologically sensitive areas. Valve locations will be selected based on criteria to minimize impact to these high consequence areas in the event of a release. They have developed an environmental protection plan, which outlines construction-related policies, procedures, and mitigation measures for construction of the project. All the design, construction, and operation will be in accordance with the U.S. Department of Transportation regulations governing the transportation of crude oil as prescribed under Parts 194 and 195 of Title 49 of the Code of Federal Regulations. In the area north of Devil's Lake, as explained in the application, testimony, and exhibits, and in order to account for the potential rise of Devil's Lake, NDPL will install buoyancy control measures along the portion of the route below elevation 1462 and will install valves at an elevation of at least 1462. Enbridge states that locations of the cathodic protection system have been specifically selected to account for the potential rise in elevation of the Devil's Lake. They have designated environmental inspectors for the project. They will document environmental compliance throughout the duration of the project. In terms of emergency response, we focused on this heavily during the hearings. NDPL hired an emergency response coordinator for their region. This coordinator has established a comprehensive training program for all their employees focused on safety, and they conduct a comprehensive public education program to ensure that the public and emergency responders are aware of pipeline safety and emergency response protocols. They've also developed an emergency response plan in consultation with the Federal Department of Transportation, PHMSA, Division. NDPL testified that its plan was the first and only industry plan to undergo an extensive review process, which included the United States EPA, the Coast Guard, and Canada's National Energy Board. NDPL received a 5-year approval of the plan from PHMSA. They testified that its emergency response plan meets or exceeds all federal, state, and local requirements under pipeline safety regulations. In terms of safety monitoring measures, to insist in the safe operation of the project, NDPL will regularly conduct visual surveillance, line balance calculations, and computational pipeline monitoring, which analyzes measurements in the pipeline data to detect anomalies. In addition, the pipeline will be coated with anti-corrosion coating, and cathodic protection systems will be installed, which will subject the pipe to a low-frequency electrical current that protects the steel against corrosion. NDPL is a member of and will participate in North Dakota One Call System. And in terms of other issues, there were two reroutes approved and included in this order as a result of public testimony at our hearings. One was a landowner south of Grand Forks who offered a different route that would take the pipeline off his land and require fewer turns in the pipeline. The company agreed and has included that reroute in this in their plans, and it's included in this order. The second was relating to concerns expressed by UND about the project's potential impacts on the Oakville Prairie Field Station. The original route constructed the line right through that station. The reroute moves the pipeline around that station, so it does not provide any impact to any of the research occurring there. So, in conclusion, the order calls for Certificate of Corridor Compatibility number 153 to be issued to NDPL designated corridor for the construction, operation, and maintenance of the proposed 300-mile, 24-inch crude oil pipeline and associated facilities. Route permit number 165 for the same. It requires that NDPL complete all Class 3 cultural resource surveys and submit documentation to the commission showing SHPO concurrence that no historic properties or sites will be affected prior to beginning construction, and they will follow all the elements of the certificate related to order provisions, transmission facility siting, and the tree and shrub mitigation plan. So that's the order. I just wanted to make a few additional comments. Yesterday at the Pipeline Summit, we heard from some of the community leaders in areas most impacted by this growth, specifically Wofford City. And while Gene Veder admitted that folks are fatigued by pipelines, he said they're more fatigued by traffic. And I think that projects like this really go to the heart of that issue. We had a very thorough review of this project. There was every opportunity for the public to come and offer their input, and we considered and accommodated as much of that input as possible in developing this order. This project provides critical, safe, clean infrastructure to serve our growing energy industry. It'll take trucks off the road, the equivalent of 4,384 trucks per day. This project also has the potential to eliminate up to 4 oil trains per day based on its capacity. So it'll reduce the pressure on our rail system as well. I think that we need to support this project. It provides a clean, orderly, efficient development of our energy resources that balances the need for this infrastructure with the safety and concerns of our public citizens who are living and working with it. So I'm going to be supporting this order today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I think sometimes it's important to put things in perspective. And the Keystone XL has been in the news for, I don't know, what, 6-7 years now, maybe longer. And it gains so much news because it's a national issue and an international border issue. So people have such an awareness of it. And I hear North Dakotans all the time talk about Keystone XL. We need to get that built. We need to get trucks off the road. That would carry about 100,000 barrels of North Dakota oil a day. It would carry other oil from Canada as well, but as far as what it would benefit North Dakota oil production, it's about 100,000 barrels per day. And our former commissioner here, Congressman Kevin Cramer, as well as Senators Hoven and Heitkamp, have done a great job of pushing that forward and trying to get it approved. But in the meantime, it just seems to be the constant talking point, if only we could get Keystone XL built. Well, for perspective, this pipeline will carry more than twice as much North Dakota oil as Keystone XL would. And it has the capacity to be upgraded significantly from that. So this pipeline will be an enormous addition to North Dakota's energy infrastructure. And to me, I think just a major step forward in moving our oil in the safest and most efficient way possible. And so I'm really excited about this project, and hopefully they're able to get it permitted across Minnesota, which people shouldn't be led to believe that once we vote on this and approve it, that it's a done deal and they're going to start construction next week and it's all going to go through. It still needs Minnesota approval. I don't know the status of that, but us taking the lead on this, I think, is an important step forward, and this will be an extremely important project for the state of North Dakota and for the safety of the people here.
Any further discussion?
Wait, my turn, right? The one thing I think is interesting is we're trying to put together, but this may be the largest project the Public Service Commission has ever approved. I can't think of any other project that was $1.3 billion of investment. Go back to the gas plant. It was close, but I think this is the largest project that I plan on voting for it as well, that will be approved by the Public Service Commission. Maybe we'll talk more about that, but that could be a milestone. Just a couple of additional thoughts and perspective. The emergency response plan, we talked a lot about that, and they have the existing line in this area. But that, to me, was really, this was the biggest pipeline that I've been involved in siting. So having the response capability there and the whole protecting the infrastructure when it's in the ground is going to be critical, because you can build this thing the proper way and do everything right, but you still have to make sure that someone doesn't put a backhoe through it. And that's the part that we've got to keep the pressure on that. As far as the pipeline specifics, it's 24 inches, but most of the size will be 0.375-inch pipeline, but in areas where it crosses critical water bodies, it's going to be up to a half-inch thick. So this is a very, very thick pipeline. I won't say it's above the standards, but it certainly is what the standards need to be for those type of water crossings. So the company really has done exactly what is required of them to make sure this is a safe product. Now we get it built. To Commissioner Crispin's point about the Minnesota portion of this, it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out, because the company testified that they want to start construction immediately in North Dakota. So they're going to start construction in North Dakota without having approval in the Minnesota side. So in my experience in between Minnesota and North Dakota with power line crossings, it'll be very interesting to watch how the Minnesota Commission deals with this, because if the Minnesota portion of this does not match the North Dakota portion of this, certainly they have to meet where they cross the river. And so this project may come back to us at some point in time for some tweaks on where it would cross the eastern part of the state. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities. But I think for the North Dakota portion, we've done the due diligence of having the three thorough hearings. This was the first pipeline that I had seen where we actually had individuals show up testifying for the project that wanted the jobs. We had individuals from the local labor unions testified at all three hearings that they want the work. They testified that their company does the work and how the extra protocols they use for safety and construction measures. I'd never seen that at the hearing, so I thought that was very interesting to watch that all shake out. So I look forward to voting for this project and thank everyone involved for getting it together. I know, Julie Prescott, this was your biggest case to date, and so you can put that down on your resume. Your first case was the biggest case ever put through North Dakota. So,
Just a couple more comments, not to belabor this, but on the river crossings, you mentioned the additional thickness on the pipe, which I think is important to mention. I also want to just mention publicly that on the river crossings, the pipe will be bored several feet, I think up to 4 feet below the bottom of the river, so they will not be touching the river in any way. So there are many mitigative efforts to protect the water bodies and the water resources, including the thickness of the pipe and the shutoff valves and the boring well below the surface, the lowest surface of those water bodies. So all of that gave me comfort in approving this project, voting to approve it. The other thing I wanted to mention is they filed this pipeline, this application on October 30th of last year, and today is just a few days short of June 30th, so June 25th. So this project was, the application was received, and we went through all of the review, public hearing, and deliberations in 8 months. You look at the federal government has been wringing their hands for 5 years or more on the Keystone XL, and I realize there's, you know, it's more complicated crossing two countries and thousands of miles, but they have the resources of the federal government behind them, and we have a staff of 40 at the Public Service Commission, only a couple of whom are dedicated to this project. So kudos to our staff. You guys continue to do a great job, very efficiently and thorough on behalf of the citizens of this state, and I'm proud of the work that was done on this project.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
That concludes my portfolio, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman.
Let's see, a few announcements and we'll open up for questions. We had talked about, we were at three different hearings in the past week. We've got the Steve Strege retirement individual. Randy and Jill, are you guys going over to that?
I'm intending to.
Okay. Esther, can you make sure you announce that? It's already noticed? Okay, way ahead of me. Well, we've got a work session this afternoon, and looking forward to next week. Actually, we can get some time caught up with our staffs. We don't actually have any hearings planned for a week or so. So I don't have any other comments than that. Randy or Jill, anything?
I do not.
Okay, we'd be happy to answer any questions if we could.
Just on the Sandpiper pipeline, did they mention how many people are hiring to actually build a pipeline?
A thousand sticks out of mind, but I would have to go check my notes again on that. I was shocked at the numbers, and I think it came from the laborers who actually reinforced that as well, but I think it was 1,000, but let me check.
And the Minnesota Commission have they scheduled anything in terms of hearings that they're doing on this?
They've already had some public outreaches. I didn't mean to cut you off, Julie.
No, commissioners don't have the hearings themselves. They had a administrative ALJ, yeah, substantive ALJ conducting the hearings, and they've had a number of those, and there have been a significant number of protests at those hearings that I've heard about, but the company seems pretty comfortable moving forward, so.
What I'm thinking out loud, Dave, is that it'll be very interesting to watch the Minnesota because there's a group in Minnesota that wants to move that route south quickly. And so if they're, as where we have it settled across south of Grand Forks, if the Minnesota portion goes away, some would want it. They want that to run in North Dakota farther along the eastern corridor, then cut across, let's say, north of Fargo. So I've just seen lots of different plans flying out there. So I think for us it's important to get our part taken care of, which we did today, but then just be aware of what goes on around us and act accordingly. The company will tell us what needs to be done in that area as far as what they have to for their Minnesota side, but we'll watch it closely.
And your feeling is that they would like to get started ASAP in the North Dakota part and then just hope or they're confident that Minnesota will get their thing done?
They're starting with the above-ground structures first, the various pumping stations, and so that's what is the most pressing initially here.
On the Northwood issue, is that the same? Was it Northwood Grain, the name of the company that actually went into bankruptcy several years ago?
Yes. Northwood Mills.
Northwood Mills, that's it.
Yeah. But these are different people. It's the same,
it's the
facility,
same facility,
but different people.
And they have a processing facility on site?
Yes.
It's the same processing facility, isn't it, that was there?
Yeah, but this is going to be for canola, though.
It's canola, and I think the other one was sunflower, wasn't it?
Soybeans.
Soybeans, okay. I was going to ask one other thing. $990,000 Did you ever get an explanation why? I suppose you don't, but...
For the high-end request to do the work.
High-end request on that.
Oh, no. No, I don't think there was any discussion of it with three other bids. I think it was just set aside.
Anything else, Dave?
I think that's good.
I guess it never hurts to take a swing, you know. We had... What, you know, of all the various AML projects, you know, they're divided into different contracts, and there was at least one, there may have been more, where we did only have one bid. And, you know, if something came in, if your only bid came in five times higher than what you expect, then I think you would not just accept it and go. But, you know, I guess if you're a contractor and you've got plenty of work, it sometimes doesn't hurt to take a swing pretty high just in case you get it, too. So maybe that's what they were thinking.
Well, there's one other question that did come to mind. It's from the consent agenda. It's CJF4, motion on oral argument with this Menards case in MDU.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what's going on in there.
Well, before our last week work session scheduled last week, we received a request from MDU requesting an opportunity for oral arguments. Capital Electric objected, but they said if you grant it, then we want some restrictions applied. So after discussion during work session, we decided that we would provide the opportunity for oral arguments. And so currently our staff and our attorney and their attorneys are working out the parameters for that, and then we will be scheduling that accordingly. It will be nothing new, no new testimony, no new issues can be brought up. They just want to restate, I guess, what they believe are the most poignant pieces of the case or poignant relevant facts and rules of law. And I guess they didn't think that we were quite understanding things.
Well, go ahead, Dave.
The only thing I was going, was that before an ALJ or is that before?
Yeah, it'll be the same hearing officer that had it before.
But yep. It'll be all
the
three of us.
Same process and all of us, yep.
I'll give you my expanded viewpoint, David. we had the hearing took place and we had our first work session. And during the first work session, I said that I thought it was leaning towards Capital Electric.
The second work session.
That's right. The first one kind of listened. In the second work session, I said I was leaning with the Capital on the two points of I felt it was duplication of service, and I felt that the fact that it was unclear whether when the company made the decision to come in there, they didn't know there was two power providers. So then MDU, I think, filed a request for the oral argument. I viewed it as, well, they didn't like the way I was going with that. And it was during the third work session, and Commissioner Crispin weighed in. So I think this is going to be quite an interesting hearing.
And scheduled when, or is that good?
We'll schedule that, I believe, today. But we've had, 24 service area agreements? And so that's where you always hope they can work it out, but they don't. So that's what we do here. Okay. Anything else, Commissioner Crispin?
Nope.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Nope.
Okay, we'll go ahead and close the official portion of our meeting. 10 minutes good or 15?
10.
We'll reconvene at 11:30. Thank you all.